Blog Talk Radio.
We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is
to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Detroit from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of light in the search, discovery, and revelation of light on life's turn. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search, type in We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, Killing Me, Not So Softly. White police officers claim reverse discrimination and victimization after shooting unarmed blacks. Well, we talked about making some noise about the abuse citizens unfortunately suffer under the authority of unruly racist authoritarian scared law enforcement. I guess for every force, there is an equal and opposite force, or at least in this case, an opposite force. To kill or murder a person who is not presenting a lethal threat is an egregious enough crime. I think we all can agree with that. To claim that you are a victim after murdering an unarmed person is delusional. Delusional has been supported in American culture and law. The colonists claimed that the indigenous peoples of North America were savages. Without their assistance with planting and providing crops, early colonists would have starved to death. The Smithsonian reports in a harsh winter of 1609 in Virginia, Jamestown Colony forced residents to do the unthinkable. Well, if you're starving, there's no food, no vegetables, no cows to slaughter. What do you think they did? A recent excavation at a historic site discovered the carcasses of dogs, cats, horses consumed during the season commonly known as starving time. But a few other newly discovered bones in particular fell through. They found the dismemberment and cannibalism of a 14-year-old English girl. Now, I don't know what you do when you're starving to death. That's probably something you do, you know, okay? In 1775, a bounty notice posts rewards for scalps of Indian men, women, and children. Europeans had converted to scalping from cutting heads off. So they used to just cut the whole head off. They converted to scalping instead of the Indian scalp. Before they learned that from the Indians, they say. Indians say they learned it from them. Well, maybe some Indians learned it from them that didn't do it. Who knows who did toward who what. But apparently, they were, you know, not a stranger to cutting off people's heads or parts of people's heads off. They later went to exterminate indigenous people from their land. Who's a savage? So, you know, this whole delusional thing about delusional thinking is not unfamiliar with the culture here in America. L.A. Times, I'm going to bring you up to date. Five Englewood officers who killed couple in parked car say they were fired because they are white. Okay? That's five white cops. Said they killed a couple, you know, in a car, said they were fired because they were white. Let's see what happened. They said they were discriminated against because they are white. I said, so five former Englewood police officers were fired after fatally shooting a couple sitting in a car have filed a lawsuit against the city claiming they were discriminated because they are white. So I don't know how that goes. The officers basically, the incident began when the officers responded to a police report of people unconscious in a Chevy, according to the lawsuit. The officers found the car stopped in the middle of the street with its engine running, and Marcatian Sandlin and Keisha Michael were unresponsive in the vehicle, the officer said. Officer saw a loaded semi-automatic gun on the woman's lap. Over the next 40 or so minutes, the officer tried to wake up the couple. One of the first two officers at the scene knocked on the driver's window. The sergeant showed up and instructed them to check the doors. All were locked. Three more officers and another sergeant, a SWAT team member with 17 years on the force, arrived soon after the lawsuit said. Some of the officers jailed command. The second sergeant who came became the incident commander, instructed one of the officers to turn his lights and sirens to see, or turn on his lights and sirens to see if the noise disturbed a couple. Then the officer was told to bump the vehicle with his patrol car. Eventually, the couple woke up, the lawsuit said. Meanwhile, higher up in the department were contemplating whether to call the SWAT team to the scene. They noticed Sand and Wake woke up first. After the incident, commander used a public address system to tell the couple to put their hands in the air, the lawsuit said. Sandin drove his Chevy into the patrol car in front of him, then reversed into the police vehicle behind him. He then reached towards the woman's lap, prompting the police officer to fire two rounds with his shotgun, the law said. Sandin was struck and later died. Moments later, the passenger door opened, and a woman reached for her lap, the lawsuit said. All five officers opened fire. Michael was pronounced dead. Officers were placed on leave and fired more than a year later. The two supervisors still work for the department, they say. The lawsuit comes as the city authorized the shredding of more than 100 police shootings and other internal investigation records weeks before a new state law goes into effect that could allow the public to access them for the first time, a move that drew criticism from civil rights advocates. California law says police department must retain records of officer shootings and internal misconduct investigations for 5 years. The city of Inglewood, however, had kept records longer than that, including case files of police shootings dating to 1991. State Senator Nancy Skinner, author of SB 1421, intended for her bill to allow public access to all qualifying records held by the department, no matter the date of the incident. December 8, 2015, for Mother Jones. First, these cops shot about 140 bullets at a black couple. Then they complained about reverse racism. 140 bullets, that's a war. Where I come from, I don't know, 140 shots. That should never happen anywhere unless somebody is shooting back at you. I could kind of understand that. But even at some point, if you're in a community, 100, that's a lot of bullets going a lot of places. So anyway, a federal judge shut them down, they said, though. But anyway, check this one out. The windshield of the car driven by Timothy Russell on the night of November 29, 2012. Following a high-speed chase, Creighton police officers fired 140 shots at Russell and his passenger, Melissa Williams. They had a picture of the windshield. It was caved in. It looked like something out of the movie, like an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, kind of the Terminator movie. Unbelievable. They said the federal judge threw out a year-long case centering on a peculiar claim. When non-black cops shoot and kill black people in Cleveland, they face stiffer repercussions than black cops who kill black people. So that's white guys again, right? This is a different case. Non-police officers, 8 white and 1 Latino, claim that they were subjected to reverse discrimination and mental anguish after a controversial 2012 incident in which they killed 2 unarmed African Americans in a fuselage of nearly 140 bullets. My question is, how many bullets would it take to kill a man? Or a woman in this case. I mean, they have a female in there too. And why does it take deadly force to subdue two unarmed people? The lawsuit was filed days after Cleveland police had shot and killed 12-year-old Tamir Rice. I don't know if you remember that. Tamir Rice was a 12-year-old playing with a little toy gun in a park somewhere outside. Cop rolled up, and within a second, Dallas Carr just basically banged Tamir Rice. It's a kid, just like a kid, you know, and shot him down, killed him. They alleged that the officers were singled out due to their race and were unfairly punished while the state investigated the shooting. Their claim of victimization ruled Judge James Gwynn in response to the city's request for summary judgment was illogic. It doesn't make sense to me either. So I'm right there with the judge. That's Victor, how are you being victimized? You just shot somebody. You know, my question is here again, is how do you perceive yourself as being a victim after you murdered two unarmed people? How can you possibly, let's try that. Let's, Joe Citizen, try that. Murder two people, consider yourself a victim. See what happens. Anyway, the events behind the case occurred at the night of November 29, 2012, according to the Ohio Bureau of Investigation report of the incident. A plainclothes officer named John Jordan saw a black man and a black woman sitting in a parked car in East Cleveland. Yeah, there was some black man and black woman sitting in a parked car in East Cleveland. I guess East Cleveland must be like that part of Cleveland. I don't know. What is it? I don't know. I don't get it. Okay, but we got a black man, black woman sitting in the car. All right, if I'm racial profiling, that's all I need, right? He suspected they were involved in illegal drug activity. Somebody help me out with this. How does a black man and a black woman sitting in a car in any part of Cleveland, how does that correlate with illegal drug activity? Because I might not know too much about Cleveland. Maybe they got different laws there, and that's what that is. Black man, black woman in a car, that's usually a drug thing for the police. So that means you can't drive your woman, your sister, your mother, nowhere in Cleveland if you're black, because you're going to be suspected of illegal drug trafficking. Right? God forbid you go on a date with your girlfriend and you park. But you automatically suspected of illegal drug trafficking? You know, something's wrong with this picture. And I know you guys get it, but I'm just making a point here. So he called the vehicle's license plate in. The dispatcher told him it was clean, but Jordan decided to search the vehicle anyway. For what? Can you just search people's cars just as you want to without probable cause? I'm sitting in my vehicle with my friend, my girlfriend, my mother, my aunt, my grandmother, maybe, what is the deal here? With anybody I want to be sitting in a car with. I'm sitting in a car. This guy sees me sitting in a car. All of a sudden, I'm involved in some illegal drug activity, and now you're going to search my, you know, violate my civil rights. Due process, right? He has no reason to even go over to this car. His reason is because he's two black people sitting in a car. It automatically connected him to a crime. Anyway, the car's driver, 43-year-old Timothy Russell, drove away, right? Jordan followed and pulled him over for failing to use a turn signal. Okay. Now, I don't know if the man refused to use a turn signal or not, but I tell you what, sounds like this police officer is instigating the situation here. He's trying to make something out of nothing. Okay? So he followed him, waited for him to do something that he could pull him over for. And in a minute, he didn't use the turn signal. I don't even know if that's true or not. But now we got to do that thing where we was talking about last week. Can we trust these guys' words? And the answer to that is no. And you definitely, you can tell by how this thing is starting out, this is not a guy you can trust. You cannot trust what he does or what he says. But we're going to keep moving. So this guy's pulled over for failing to use his traffic signal, the turn signal. So the officer got out of his unmarked car, Russell, took off, right? In the space of 18 seconds, 13 cops fired. That's the one down the line. Another officer saw Russell's car speeding by. As it passed, he heard a loud bang, which he later said sounded like a gunshot. He sped after the car, and other police cars soon joined the pursuit. The chase lasted 25 minutes, and at one point involved at least 62 police cars. They must not have too much to do in Cleveland, because 62 police cars chasing two unarmed people. All the while, the suspect's car backfired, you know, off the norm, right? Some officers noticed this, but did not radio this information to others. So people noticed that the police officers noticed that, okay, this car is making a noise, backfiring, which other cops are saying sound like a gun. But I don't know. Anyway, the police finally cornered the car in the middle of a parking lot. After shouting for Russell to stop the vehicle, an officer fired at both Russell and his passenger, 30-year-old Melissa Williams. In the space of 18 seconds, 13 cops fired nearly 140 rounds at the car. One officer, Michael Brillo, soldier, hero, emptied the magazine of his Glock 17, reloaded, jumped onto the hood after everyone else stopped shooting, and shot through the windshield at least 15 times, firing a total of 49 rounds. Russell and Williams were each shot more than 20 times. Both were unarmed. Take a minute here because was it a death sentence to drive away? What was the need for all the shooting? Now, 13 cops doing it. To me, that should be 13 convictions. 13 convictions of 13 people on trial for homicide. Because there is no lethal force. There is no need for lethal force here. You cannot kill people because they are drove away from you. Or you can't. What am I saying? I guess you can kill people for driving away from you and get away with it. What am I saying? It shouldn't be that way, but apparently people can get away with that. All right. So anyway, here we go. Public reaction to the shooting, which occurred more than a year and a half before the white police officer killed Mike Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, was muted. Russell and Williams' death did not spark any mass protest, just a smithereen of critical newspaper columns and a press conference from church leaders calling for justice. No noise, y'all. Not much noise anyway. I won't say no noise because it was a little something there. We got a little noise. Following the shooting, the 13 officers who had shot Russell and Williams were given 3 days of paid leave. 3 days of paid leave to recuperate and adjust emotionally. These guys got 3 days. They got paid to recuperate. What was the trigger thing? What, their finger was hurting or something? Like what? The shoulder was hurting from shooting shotgun too many times? Or the finger was hurting from pulling that trigger? I mean, recuperate from what? And adjust emotionally. talent. They needed 3 days paid leave to recuperate and adjust emotionally before they even came to work that day, because they had the capacity to do that. They shouldn't have been on the police force. As required by the police department's policy on officers who have used deadly force. What about the police department's policy on when to use deadly force? They just skipped that whole part. They were then put on restrictive duty and stationed in the police gymnasium for a 45-day cooling off period. They remained there for another year while the Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigation looked into the shooting. I mean, why are we needing all this? What do we need to determine? What does it take for law enforcement to determine you're wrong for shooting these unarmed people? This went to the Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigation, right? A process that included gathering forensic evidence, interviewing more than 130 officers, reviewing dash cam and surveillance videos, retrieving the officers' text messages and phone records, and creating an animated reenactment of the shooting. That's a lot to do when you have some unarmed folks. None of the 13 officers, including the 9 plaintiffs, were fired or suspended. The Ohio Bureau of Investigation found that the shootings were the result of a systemic failure in the Cleveland Police Department, but it absolved the individual officers of wrongdoing. So the Ohio Bureau of Investigation said, hey, that's a systemic problem. Those 13 officers that murdered them, 2 unarmed blacks, that's systemic. That's a systemic problem. And, you know, these guys, they are not, you know, guilty of anything. They haven't done anything wrong. There's nothing wrong with shooting a couple of unarmed black folks that, you know, drove away from when you try to stop them. Hey, that's what the Ohio Bureau of Investigation found. The higher up, wow. But they're interesting, but it's not surprising, as we've seen. Brillo, who is not a plaintiff in the discrimination case, eventually faced voluntary manslaughter charges. Voluntary manslaughter charges and was acquitted in May, sparking protest. Now, Brillo, that's the superhero. Mark Brillo, that's the guy that emptied his magazine, his 17-clip Glock, reloaded, jumped onto the hood after everyone else stopped shooting, and shot through the windshield at least 15 times, firing a total of 49 rounds. And an unarmed, shot-up couple. Try that, Joe Citizen. See what happens to you. Don't try it, but I'm being facetious here. But you get my point. He was acquitted for doing that. Try that. Try shooting somebody, and then after you people have shot him up, go up on the hood of the car and shoot the bodies 17 times or whatever you're going to do. You're going to go to jail for that. Anyway, the Cleveland Police Department did not respond to a question about whether he is still on the force. The man should be incarcerated. All 13 of them should be incarcerated. And none of them should be on the force. His case prompted the Department of Justice investigation that found that the Cleveland police force engages in a pattern or practice of the use of excessive force in violation of the Fourth Amendment. In November 2014, the city reached a $3 million settlement with Russell and Williams' family. That's not a victory to me, as I said previously. That's not a victory, and $3 million is not enough for what happened to them anyway. Let's just get that straight. Number one, it's 13 police officers. And one that went, I guess he wanted to kill them just in case they had the ability to rise from the dead. There's no weapon. There's nobody being fired upon. Nothing. And nothing was done. It's okay. The message I'm getting from this is okay to kill unarmed blacks in Cleveland. You got Tommy all right. Children, a black child, all right to kill him. It's all right to kill him as you see fit. Just make sure that you make something up about him and about you that kind of tells a story of why you did it. It don't have to make sense. Just have something to say. Because these guys just might as well say to us, we hunted them down and we killed them. Because that's what it sounds like. Anyway. Translation. You cannot trust the police to police the police department. At least not in Cleveland. Not the Cleveland Police Department. Or the Ohio Bureau of Investigation. And they are at the state level. You can't trust them guys. Those people going through the motion and not even looking at what's all right in front of everybody. This is not a magic trick. The magic trick was these guys getting off for this. That is how deep it runs in Ohio, right up to the Ohio Bureau of Investigation. In this case, the Justice Department had to intervene. That's serious. That's saying a lot about Ohio. I don't know. That should never happen. Despite having their records cleared, the officers sued the city. Despite having their records cleared, the officers sued the city. Are y'all hearing this? Claiming that boring and menial work in the gym caused them not only financial harm, since they could not work overtime, you know, to kill some more unarmed black, I guess, I don't know, but permanent emotional damage, including anxiety and loss of self-esteem. Can you imagine the permanent emotional damage that the families of these two people are experienced? Can you imagine the emotional damage that black people in Cleveland experienced after this case, right after Tamir Rice, being constantly told that it's okay to kill unarmed, non-threatening black folk, because that's the message they're sending out. You know, we're not punishing anybody, and they're within the scope of the law to do so, to kill you. So, get your bulletproof vest when you go to Cleveland, especially if you're driving around with your girlfriend and you're black. Because if you stop your car, this could happen to you. Nonetheless, the officers said their complaint was not about the gym, but about how they had to work there longer than their black colleagues who had killed black suspects. So these guys are complaining about being punished in the gym longer than black cops who killed black suspects. These guys who killed these unarmed people, I ain't seen nothing about an apology. Maybe I didn't research enough to see if these guys actually apologize for what they did. Apology is not really going to do anything. We know that. You apologize for bumping into somebody. Oh, I didn't see you. You know, you got a chance to not do that again. But once you murder somebody, you don't have a chance to not do that again. Those people are dead. Those families are impacted upon those communities that they come from. It's going to have an impact on them. And it's going to have an impact on black people all over the United States and all over the world. They're getting this message because they're getting this picture about how in this country, it's okay to kill black folk. And I'm getting that picture too, and I'm here. I'm kind of getting the picture. It's okay. We'll figure out, we'll make up a story to get you out of it, and we'll go through the motions with the investigations. We'll quit you. We'll find you're not guilty, justified, blah, 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 blah. And I would pay them off. Make it look good. It's a problem. I said, at first, the officer's claim appeared to be accurate. Data submitted to the court by the Cleveland Police Department showed that in 5 years leading up to the incident, white officers who killed black people spent an average of 262 days on restricted duty, while black officers who killed black people spent an average of 79 days. However, Judge Gwynn pointed out that this number was misleading since it was skewed by the Russell Williams incident, which involved far more officers than were involved in any other shooting death. The data, which had not previously been publicly available, also showed a striking racial imbalance in the use of deadly force by Cleveland cops. While 50% of Cleveland's population was black when Russell Williams was killed, just 26% of its police force officers are. We ain't surprised about that. Between 2007 and 2013, the city's police killed at least 21 people, of whom 16, or three-quarters, were black. Of the 32 cops who fatally shot people, this includes the shooting of Russell Williams, and other cases in which multiple cops killed one person, 24 were white and 7 were black. In at least 18 instances in which police fatally shot unarmed people, at least 15 involved white cops. 18, right, instances, 15 involved white cops, okay? Black police, on the other hand, did not kill any white people, armed or unarmed. Y'all heard that? Black police, on the other hand, did not kill any white people, armed or unarmed. The cops' discrimination claim was not unprecedented, but the judge's dismissal of it was. In 2010, an all-white jury awarded Cleveland patrolman Edward Lent nearly $300,000 for emotional distress in a federal discrimination case. Lentz had been assigned to Police Jim while the city investigated an incident in 2000 where he jumped on the top of a car and fired 14 bullets through the roof, killing the driver, an unarmed 12-year-old black boy. This is another hero. It's not safe. Lentz claimed that he was made into a scapegoat to appease the considerable ongoing outcry of the black community regarding shootings by white police officers. Scapegoat. Scapegoat. It's whatever they say it is. It sounds like these guys just get to say what something is, and that's what it is. Whatever they say it is, that's what it is. It doesn't matter what they do. It's whatever they say it is. The truth, they have no room for the truth, no space, no respect for the truth. Two previous cases had also been made similar claims. In 2005, two white Cleveland officers entered the house of a 15-year-old Brandon McCloud at 5 a.m. to search for evidence related in a string of robbery. They found McCloud in a closet. He had a steak knife, and they shot him 10 times. Okay. The same year, a white officer shot and killed an unarmed black man, Larry Renshaw, claiming he had reached for the officer's gun. That's a good one. That's one you can always use. None of the three cops in these all cases were charged, though the officer later paid $50,000 settlement to Renshaw's family. But they all claimed they were victims of reverse discrimination by being placed on restricted duty in the gym, and the city of Cleveland settled with them for a total of $450,000. So he made $400,000 because he gave $50,000 to this guy's family, which is nothing. The officers partly blamed the media, which began to sensationalize the event. How is it sensationalizing covering the murder of unarmed civilians? That's not sensationalizing, that's reporting. By pointing out their race and the race of the victims. The officers in the current case partly blamed their plight on the media, which they stated the complaint in their complaint immediately began to sensationalize the event. So, you know, they used a deposition of an ex-cop, retired cop named James Simone. He shot 11 people, killing 5, the last one was an unarmed bank robber. They asked him a question, could you talk about your observations of the police or the political influence that has occurred when a white officer shoots a black suspect? Well, it's obvious that the investigations from the very beginning are focused on satisfying the media and the people that are involved. You're talking about the minority community?
Right.
All right. I don't know what the sensitive term for it is, and I don't mean to insult you, but you know what? Everything we do is based on color in this city, and I don't know why. I just don't understand why. To me, it's beyond me. It's a strange way. The judge just proved him wrong, right in that plaintiff's prove him wrong, writing that a plaintiff must do more than merely point to race and proclaim discrimination, like these police officers are doing. They're just saying you've been discriminated. You just shot somebody unarmed, and you're talking about you've been discriminated because all they did was put you in the gym when you should be incarcerated. Come on now, that's one of the big things. You got away with murder. By throwing out the officer's case, he just made it harder for white officers to shoot unarmed black people and claim they're the real victims.
What?
Is this the problem? They kind of like made the problem that these officers can't complain. Now, they're making it harder for them to shoot black people. What? Unarmed black people, they shouldn't be shooting. What do you mean? This is sick. This whole, just that I'm having this conversation is sick. By throwing out the officer's case, he just made it harder for white people to shoot unarmed people and claim that they are the real victims. Woo! Somebody help me. So, there you have it. This genius thinks it's acceptable to kill, murder unarmed black people and claim they are the victim. Claim, according to the dictionary, means to state or assert that something in the case, typically without providing evidence or proof, something is the case typically without providing evidence or proof. That's like saying it's so because I said so. It is because I say it is. That's the stay out of jail card to claim that you are the victim after murdering them. Just like they claim they saw a weapon, they claim they reached for their weapon, or they claim they were fearful. Because now I'm even skeptical about this whole being afraid thing. Why or how could they think this way? It seems like the culture and institution of slavery has had an adverse effect on the Europeans' thinking and emotional well-being. The end result is delusional thinking, habitual lying, paranoia, aggression, and homicidal tendencies. Maybe they have always been that way, but that institution of slavery just reinforced it here in America. From the American Psychological Association, there's evidence of racial disparities in many levels of law enforcement, they say. Huh? This is from Christian Weir, 2016. Experts point to systemic problems as well as the implicit, largely unconscious biases mentioned in the debate that they had. So that means that people are reacting biasly, even though consciously, I don't know about all that, but this is what they're saying. They are biased, but consciously, they don't consciously recognize that they are, but they act that way. I don't believe that, but that's what the, you know, that's what these guys are saying. Biases aren't unique to police, but it matters. In matters of criminal justice, implicit bias can have life-altering implications. You're damn right, because black people get sentenced longer terms, guilty, and faster than white folks, all right? Charlie Manson murdered some people and some strange stuff. Tookie Williams, who got executed after writing children's book and being considered for a Nobel Peace Prize. Charlie Manson is still Charlie Manson. No turnaround in jail. Go figure that out. Social media has turned the spotlight on cases of racial discrimination. And that's a good thing. Because we come from a foundation of racial discrimination, prejudice, hatred, and things like that. So why not cover it? You're covering everything else. That's one thing. That's one of the things you need to cover because it's here and it's prevalent here. They're not. Social media isn't making it prevalent. It's just making it visible. It's making prevalent visible. And it's a difference between making something prevalent with social media and making it prevalent visible. This thing is happening often, too often. Okay, so Reginald G. Fryer, Jr., Ph.D., examined more than 1,000 shootings in 10 major police departments and found no racial differences in officer-involved shooting. Fryer did, however, find that black civilians are more likely to experience other types of force, including being handcuffed without arrest, pepper sprayed, or pushed to the ground by an officer. Now, really, that sounds strange to me right there. Because, look, if you're subjected to all of that is stuff that leads to you getting killed. So I don't know if this guy was paying attention to what actually happens to black people, because this is the stuff that leads then to blacks getting killed by these police officers. Everybody's not in the mood to be arrested for nothing. Everybody don't want to submit to that. He said, supporting his research is research by Philip Atiba Galt, Ph.D., a sociologist at the University of California, Los Angeles, co-founder of the Center for Policing Equity. They had data reviewed data from 12 police departments and found that black residents were more often suspected to police force than suspected by police force than white residents, even after adjusting for whether the person had been arrested for violent crime. So basically, they're targeting black residents. You black, you being looked at harder than that white guy. Which says it's just your white partner, had the police tell you why the white guy does this thing. You're going to get over like a fat rat with the dumb cops anyway. Other data show that while black residents make up 28% of Oakland population, they account for 60% of the police stop targeting black people. This is not new. Everybody knows this. You know, this is not a thing that black people in the hood experience and only know. This is a thing that sociologists and people who, like these guys, PhDs, study this. They also found that explicit prejudice occurs, says John DeVito, Ph.D., psychologist at Yale University, who studied both implicit and explicit prejudice. Many police departments and officers take a paramilitary approach to law and order, and sometimes adopt an us-versus-them attitude toward black community, That means that these guys that you may think are there to serve and protect you are your enemy. Because in order for them to be against you, they cannot be with you. It's a black community. So it's not criminal. This is the black community here. Everybody in the black community is not criminal. But these guys put everybody in the same basket and say, you are the enemy. So now you got a guy with lethal force, right, coming in your community looking at you like you're the enemy. That means he's your enemy. If a man views you as his enemy, you are his enemy until otherwise noticed. As long as you view as somebody's enemy, that means you, whether you view yourself as an enemy or not, you are his enemy because he's going to treat you like his enemy. You understand that? So you gotta be hyper vigilant to stay alive. And that's better than not. It's not going to keep you alive, but it may in some circumstance. There can be a lot of dehumanization that occurs in the conversations people have, and that's explicit. Even cops talking that down on you and all that stuff, right? In many cases, however, biases come from unconscious or unintentional beliefs. A large proportion of white Americans have these implicit biases, and it's hard to expect police officers to be any different. So that's a large population of white Americans have these implicit biases. So they got things that they feel about or think about black folk. And what happens, like I said previously, you doing the police force, you that maybe third, fourth, fifth down the line, because you, whatever you came in there first, you always going to be that. Police officer, second, third, or fourth down the line. I don't know how it go for you, for each individual. But your biases come with you. Implicit bias are attitudes or stereotypes that can influence our beliefs, actions, and decisions, even though we're not consciously aware of them and don't express those beliefs verbally to ourselves or others. That's a person that's in denial that he's a racist. Let's go on. One of the most well-demonstrated types of implicit bias is the unconscious association between black individuals and crime. That association can influence an officer's behavior even if he or she doesn't hold or express explicitly racist beliefs. What's the difference if it's something that you wear on your shoulder or something that you hold down deep within? The end result is the same. You're going to approach this person the same way. Anyway. The researchers found that participants shoot unarmed targets often and more quickly if they are black rather than white. Researchers found that participants shoot unarmed targets more often, more quickly if they are black rather than white, and refrain from shooting more often when the target is white. The most common mistakes are shooting an unarmed black target and failing to shoot an unarmed white target. They had this little test they ran. The participants are presented with images of young men, white, black, holding either guns or innocuous objects like cell phones, soda cans, and stuff like that. The goal is to shoot armed targets, but not unarmed targets. And the result of this thing, they were shooting. Basically, if you're black, you're getting shot. You had a greater chance of being shot, whether you're armed or unarmed. So they have a tendency to shoot black more than white. They refrain from shooting more often when the target is white. So it doesn't matter if your bias is internal and expressed externally or externally and expressed externally. It's the same result. A dead black man. All right. I don't know why they're making it. I hope they're not trying to make a distinction between the people because that have explicit biases and internal or that biases that they don't express outwardly. Just because you don't express it outwardly, but so what? What does that have to do with it? That just means you hide it. You hide who you are. Anyway, we don't have that long tonight. We're just on here for an hour tonight. That's the type of stuff that's going on. We got guys that if you don't want to listen to, you don't want to hear it come from me. We got some PhDs saying the same thing. You know, these guys are doing these studies. Basically, that these, you know, you can look it up yourself. John DeVito, PhD, social psychologist at Yale University. He did this particular study with the participants are presented with images. No, that's not here. He did the, he said the attitudes and stereotypes can influence our beliefs and actions. And he had the implicit biases. It's an unconscious association. He talked about that, you know. But it's just because you're unconscious of it, but your behavior is an expression of your unconscious association or beliefs, you still are going to react the same way as that openly biased person. So they're no different. And it doesn't matter what color you are. If you feel that way about black folks, it's just okay to just gun them down any kind of way you want to. You're a threat to the community. And you're a threat to the stability of this country. Because how long do you think people are just going to sit back and take that? And we have lots of these guys are all PhDs for you people that like people that have letters behind their name. That's why I have them in here. So you can go look them up. David M. Corey, PhD, a police psychologist and founder of the founding president of the American Board of Police and Public Safety Psychologists. Yes, implicit bias can affect us, he says, right? Under pressure, he said, from the public, many police departments have implemented implicit bias workshops and training. So that police are trying to do something to their credit, to the ones that are trying to do something. Admit you're racist and you have biases toward black people, and learn how to work with yourself. Because if you can't deal with your own issues, you have no business in our community armed and with the idea that it's okay for you to use deadly force, especially if you feel fearful. But you were fearful before you joined the police department. You are going to kill somebody. You're putting everybody at risk, you and your fellow officers, the community. So we got this problem. And it's not just me talking. We got these PhDs. All these guys got these letters that everybody like. Calvin K. Lai, PhD at Harvard University. All the night schools and everything. They all did tests and research in terms of this biases that we have in this country. Because it's not police bias. It's individual bias. Because you're not a police officer. It's an occupation. It's not who you are. It's the work that you're doing. So we have 90 seconds left. I just want to thank everybody for listening. I know I got on soapbox a little bit, but this is a bizarre show tonight that I'm even having a conversation about something like this. And it just gives you a good picture of where we are. And we're in a lot of trouble. You know, it's like, I don't know what to say. You know, this is sick. So you guys out there from the black community, join the police force trying to make changes. That's what I say. Join government trying to make changes. Don't join government and police forces just for a career. Try to be more than a police officer, because we need more black police officers who mean well in our community. And if you're white, you need to be, you know, straight. Keep straight with yourself. Get your mind right. Some brothers say, get your mind right. You really should be on the police force if you had these biases. Well, man, black guys in Cleveland, black cops, they ain't kill no white people. How they do that? You think that the white cops might be able to do something like that? I don't know. I want to say good night. Each one, and check out, especially when you go to Cleveland.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Detroit from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.